Welcome to the Phi Life Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me, as always, is Brad Pilon. And today we're going to talk about if you're going with the current, or what it is that you're the end result of what you're doing shouldn't surprise you if what you're getting is what everyone else is getting, and you're doing what everyone else is doing. I know that was a bit of a difficult.
Yeah, we'll take this back a bit. I mean, last time you and I talked, I was down in Kissimmee, Florida at Epcot, and I was telling you a little bit about how just what I saw and what was making me think about in terms of, you know, obesity rate, etc. And we actually got ripped on just slightly for that last episode of Phi Life, because someone said they wanted to see more data. They just didn't want to just hear about, you know, me telling them that I saw people who were, in my eyes, extremely heavy. They wanted sort of more science behind it. And so, you know, even though I explained that Phi Life is mostly just you and I sort of thinking out loud, that, yeah, you know what, more science is a welcome thing. So, John, you and I have taken upon ourselves to pull up the research on how much we eat. Only we didn't look up the, you know, scientific research and measuring calories. We actually looked up the economic research. And I think there's a lot to be learned from this data. So first thing, number one, is the total food sales in the United States in 2009. $1.6 trillion. So the 330 million people, roughly, in the United States spent $1.6 trillion on food.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's more money than I've I can't even picture what that would look like, but it's a lot of money, which also leads me to believe it's also a lot of food. Interesting stats coming out of this as well is that if you look at total supermarket sales, you're looking at roughly $526 billion in 2009. You look at total restaurant food sales, you're looking at close to $565 billion. So in general, we are spending, or the United States is spending, more money in restaurants than they are buying their own food. So we're starting to see some interesting trends here, is that it's hard to lie about what you do with your money, right? I mean, it's everything when it comes to money is tracked, especially in the United States. So while you might want to tell yourself that, yeah, you know, we're doing okay, and I buy my fruits and vegetables, etc., you may, when you go shopping, buy fruits and vegetables. But the truth is, you're spending more money in restaurants than you are in shopping. So I think these are some really important numbers to look at, because the money doesn't lie, right?
No, and this is what I was saying about trends. Like, this is what most people are doing, and so. The results most people are getting, this is why they're getting them.
Exactly. Per person, it's estimated that in 2010, people in the United States will eat about 108 pounds of red meat and about 99 pounds of poultry. So you're looking at that, like, pretty close to 208 pounds of red meat and poultry be consumed. So for most people down there in the States, you'd say roughly your body weight in meat is what you're going to eat in 2000.
Well, in many cases, more than your body weight, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Other factors we have to consider. Number of grocery stores in the United States we have here in this research being 40,275. Number of restaurant food service locations comes out to 945,000. Right. So what we're learning here very quickly is that if you're a part of this group, if these numbers, I mean, in a normal distribution, right, these numbers represent an average of what's going on in the U.S. If you are part of this average, then there's no reason for you to sit in front of the mirror and look at your body and going, I wonder how that happened. Because it's very simple. It happened because you're part of a large economic conglomerate that's driven by $1.6 trillion being changed hands for food, right? If you're doing what everybody else is doing right now, there should be no surprise if you're gaining weight.
And that's interesting, because that goes back to the pushback people are getting when they try to start a diet and they don't do what everyone else is doing. Well, the reason anyone tries a diet, and it is on, it's to do, it's, if this is what everyone else is doing, is spending all this money on food, and the general trend is that people in North America are just basically getting heavier. Well, obviously you don't want to do what everyone's doing because you don't want the result everyone else is getting. And then when people try to make a change, they get picked on for it.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the old saying is you vote with your money, right? There is a different stat set, but there is roughly 3,900 calories being produced per person in the United States.
Per day.
The reason for this is not because, you know, they're some evil plot to make you obese. It's quite simply is that we voted with our money, with our $1.6 trillion, that we want more calories. And they're just going to keep providing, they being the nutrition industry, food, supplements, you name it, anything that produces calories. They're just going to look for a tipping point. So they will just keep producing until we slow down buying. And this is the issue. So you vote with your money. If you want to know what's going on in your life, with what's important to you, take a look at where you're spending the money that you earn. And if you're spending the majority of it on food, majority of that money being spent on food in restaurants, you know, the majority of that food you're spending in restaurants being on high-calorie items like red meat, etc., it shouldn't be surprising to you that you perhaps do not look the way you want to. And that wasn't a shot at red meat causing obesity or anything other than the fact that red meat dishes are typically higher in calories.
Yeah, there actually is an interesting thing online where people can tag their credit card to a website where other people can watch what you've spent money on. I don't know how many people are actually going to go for that, but it's another example of one of the most intimate things you can let anyone know is how you spend your money.
Absolutely.
Like, it doesn't matter what you tell people. It matters where you actually will go and put money down for something.
Mm-hmm. No, agreed. Another stat I found interesting is also not how much money you're spending, but also where you're spending it. So there are 40,000, roughly, grocery stores in the U.S. There are 150,000 convenience stores and almost 100,000 restaurants. So more often than not, you're spending your money in a restaurant or convenience store than you are in a grocery store. Right now, is it possible to spend your life doing nothing but eating in restaurants and convenience stores and still maintaining a lean body? I'm sure it's possible on paper. What we're seeing on these stats is just, again, you're voting with your money, right? Is that you're telling people you'd rather have your food prepared for you than to go out and buy it and make it yourself. The problem with that is that the people preparing your food for you would like to make a profit. So they want to produce that food for you as cheaply and efficiently as possible. And this creates the vicious cycle, right? We keep demanding more food prepared for us in 100,000 different locations, and the people producing those food wants to do it as cheaply as possible so they can pay the 12.7 million people who are employed in the restaurant industry. Right? So it just comes down to a matter of watching what's going on and really paying attention to what you're spending your money on.
Yeah, in this case, you might say, well, you know, that doesn't describe me. Like, you know, I don't fall into all these categories. The point is, this is what most people are being. This is you may not spend as much money in the restaurant industry as the next person over, and maybe you do spend more money or time at grocery stores instead of restaurants. But if this is the landscape and this is the direction it's trending towards, there being significantly more restaurants than supermarkets and convenience stores, eventually that can affect your behavior patterns because a convenience store is convenient. You know, it's right there. You might be picking things up there that you otherwise wouldn't have if they weren't as abundant as they are. Same with the amount of restaurants. If there was less restaurants, you may just not use them as often because they're just not as convenient to get to. So as much as you can fight it, there's some degree of normalizing that this does that you almost can't control. Otherwise, you're always fighting the uphill battle of not going with how the environment is around you.
Exactly. So here's the general thing. Extreme here is that if you're part of this collective, you're going to be gaining weight. Because realistically, if you're part of the group of people, you know, spending in that average, right, if you're fitting in that $1.5 to $1.6 trillion and you're consuming those 3,900 calories, let's be honest, it is next to impossible for you to be burning off the excess calories you're consuming, right? So you are setting yourself up to gain weight. So if gaining weight is not what you want, you cannot do what everybody else is doing. I mean, it's plain and simple. You have to choose an alternative lifestyle, because the average lifestyle right now is skewed towards that of increasing body weight. And then, of course, all the things that go along with that, if you let it, being the lifestyle-related diseases like diabetes, the self-esteem issues, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And so I guess the simplest way for us to show that was to just pull this data on how much money gets spent on all the different type of food venues and how much, you know. It's really hard to separate yourself from what everyone else around you is doing. And this comes back to that, the social support post that you put up. If everyone else is fitting into is typical of these averages, and you don't want to be a part of it anymore, that's where you'll face some pushback and some scrutiny, because, I don't know, I guess we get back to the old thing, like either they feel threatened or they feel like you're leaving them, or they, like you disapprove of their lifestyle or something. And it's even more difficult if you're the one fish swimming upstream instead of with the stream.
No, absolutely. And that is the issue. I mean, we talk about social support, et cetera, and I just recently wrote about this on my blog, and it's over 60 people commenting on this, and it's been almost the exact opposite of what I was expecting, is that people are finding the same thing. It's the concept of social support on paper works really well. But unfortunately, social support has really turned into, you know, I support you, but you're doing it wrong, right? It's that constant nagging, constant interest in what you're doing, and the constant, I guess, insurance or to trying to make sure that what you're doing is the same as what they're doing. The crabs in the bucket phenomena, where they just everybody wants you to be, you know, part of the group. You're not supposed to do something different. When it comes to weight loss, what we really need is more just social acceptance, more than support, right? We just let us do what we're doing and just don't weigh in on it either way, and we'd be highly appreciative.
Yeah, I mean, and it's weird. It almost sounds odd to tell people to keep it to themselves as far as weight loss, but some people just, they find that that's maybe one or two people who are like-minded, and other than that, they actually can't tell anybody because it causes more trouble than it's worth.
No, absolutely. And again, I mean, if you're going to be part of that group, you know, that's spending all that money, that's consuming all those calories, you are actually a large driving force behind economy, right? You're creating jobs. You are. I mean, there's so many things you're involved in. You're part of that network. When you decide not to do that, you're stepping away and turning your back on a lot of people, right? To not quote unquote age gracefully, but actually, you know, not gain weight into your 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond, while the rest of your friends are, it's a very difficult decision for you to make and very difficult thing for them to accept, let alone support. So I think this is where social acceptance comes into play. And for you to figure out what's important to you or what you're doing or what's going on in your life is really just keep track of what you're spending your money on, and that's where a lot of the answers will come from.
Yeah. So, I mean, so what happens if you start up with Eat Stop Eat, that there's nothing to keep track of there, at least on your stop days, because you're not spending any money?
Absolutely. You know what would be interesting would be to simply take and it would be a very easy research trial to do, but people who are actively losing weight versus people who are not, who started the same body weight, so same height, same body weight, and instead of measuring their calorie intake or their exercise, just measure money spent on food.
Oh yeah, that'd be awesome. I think it would be a linear correlation for sure.
Yeah, you'd be spending less money. I mean, it just logically makes sense. And then we can get into the whole argument of healthy food costing more than non-healthy food, but the issue generally remains the reduction, the absolute change, would probably favor the person losing weight.
Oh yeah, but even if you were during a weight loss routine, even if you were eating designer, you know, boutique healthy foods, you still have to eat less of them.
Exactly.
So I mean, it doesn't matter how much they cut. I mean, unless they're that much more expensive, you're still just buying less total amount.
Yeah. Again, you know, it'd be interesting to see the absolute daily. Yeah, well, even an average, but the amount spent on food for a vegetarian versus a classic American diet versus a paleo diet, and really just see which ones have the, you know, really play it out. But it's kind of, to me, being not an area that you'd ever study in a classic nutrition or physiology undergrad or even graduate program, this type of data fascinates me. It's probably out there, but it would be a very good way to quickly assess the health of an area, probably, is to look at the economics of their food intake.
Yeah, totally. And whether or not they're sustainable.
Yeah, though, very true.
What if any of those lifestyles are actually super expensive? And mm-hmm. Maybe people give up on them because they just can't afford to eat that way for an extended period of time.
Yep. I actually just read that the number one predictor of obesity and diabetes is income. And it's actually, so the lower the income, the increased risk of obesity and diabetes. Of course, this is correlative, not causative, but very interesting because it's basically the exact opposite of what we at least assume used to be true.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, which is interesting because then you have people who have low income, but spending a larger percentage of that income on food. It'd be very interesting to look at it from all angles.
Well, and cheap, high calorie density foods too.
Exactly. But, you know, so boiling down, I mean, that number 1.6 trillion in and of itself probably isn't as important as looking at the fact that majority of it, more of it spent on restaurants and, you know, a large amount spent on red meat and chicken. So boiling down the money you spend on food and just keep looking at that and, I mean, it's your own little research experiment, but not just the amount of money you're spending, but then where you're spending it, what you're spending it on. That's probably, like, tracking that would probably be more effective than trying to, because you really can't, but trying to track calories. Whereas with the economics of it, you can track that. I mean, it's a guess at best to say that, you know, the chocolate bar you ate this morning was 220 calories.
Well, I just don't think too many people budget for their food. I think some people might maybe budget. I think they're selective. I think people might budget or have an idea of what they spend at the grocery store on a weekly or whatever, biweekly basis. But that's not the only – the food you buy at the grocery store is not the only food anybody eats. People eat all that, you know, at all different locations, like coffee shops, convenience stores, restaurants. If you budget all of that, I think you'd have a way better look at it. Well, I mean, obviously, you'd have your complete look at how much money you're spending on food. And then from there, it'd be an interesting experiment to just set your monthly budget, including everything, not just grocery store, but all different food choices. Set a monthly budget and see if you can stick to it and see how you end up eating that way.
Yep. And then if lowering the budget creates a reduction in body weight. Because what I was about to say was that, well, you know, it's a guess at best to say the chocolate bar you ate was 220 calories for all the reasons we've discussed previously in terms of how inaccurate food labeling is, food weights are, overages, underages, averages, rounding, etc. It's just very, very hard to say for sure that chocolate bar is 220 calories.
Right.
But you are – it's a finite number to know exactly you spent $1.45 on that chocolate bar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's not I spent $1.46 or it might have been $1.50. It's like, no, there's a receipt. We know exactly what you spent on the chocolate bar.
Right.
So for that regards, the money involved in food – with the exception of going to friends and family's houses and getting free food. But it's probably the most accurate food-related measurement you can make.
Yeah, probably. And like we said, it may not necessarily be that less equals less money spent equals less food, less calories eaten.
Mm-hmm.
But there's probably some spot where if you hit a particular budget number, within that number, you're going to try to get a certain number of within that number, you're trying to get a certain.
Yeah,
listen to me talk. I'm just butchering it, but there's probably, I guess, what you could call a sweet spot where, you know, a particular budget value forces you to buy a certain amount of food at the grocery store. Allows you to go to restaurants once, or, you know, for a certain amount of time, and it kind of balances it for you. Balances your caloric consumption and the quality of the food, so to speak, just based on the number you choose to spend. So yeah, there probably is a sweet spot for each person where they like that's the number that gets them like the best sort of selections of food.
Yeah, no, and then you know I'm also be very interested. I wonder if actually people are doing this because you know that my opinion is if you're gonna eat, eat the good stuff, right? So, you know, I like for ice cream, I'm a Kwartha Dairies or Häagen-Dazs type of guy. I like the good food for chocolate. You know, I like my Lindt chocolate. So I do pay a bit more for that, but I also eat a lot less in general than most people do. So it'd be also interesting to compare, my intake with someone who isn't following sort of an intermittent fasting, slightly calorie restricted lifestyle. And just see, you know, is there a cost saving involved in what I do? Is there not? But regardless, you would be able to tell by going through my economics that how I'm choosing to spend my money. So,
right.
And because that choice is relatively fixed, I think it'd be pretty easy month to month to correlate the cost of my food going up and or down with what's happening in my body.
Yeah, or the shifting of what got purchased.
Yeah. All right. So bottom line here is that a good indication of who you are is how you spend your money, and not just food. Right. You could take your credit card bills only because they line out everything you spent money on for the last year and paint a pretty good picture of who you are. It may not be who you think you are, but it would be a pretty good indication. I mean you live in an economy, and you are part of that economy, and it's very telling to find out where you spend your money. It would actually be a very good experiment for everybody, almost everybody listening, is to really kind of tool down and figure out not just giant lump sums, right, but you know comparative numbers too. Like you spend, what was the one I had? I spend more money on coffee and or coffee shop purchases per week than I do on gasoline for my car. So, you know, and I'm eating more than just a coffee. I'm getting coffee and a lunch or something like that. But in general, you know, it's a pretty good indication of where I'm choosing to spend my money if I'm spending more money on coffee than I am on gas for my car. And I'm sure a lot of people could find information like that that is just a little bit mind-blowing in regards to, wow, you know, I'm spending a lot. Now,
you can even surprise yourself.
Oh, absolutely. For me, for instance, right, the obvious argument is, yeah, but I'm spending $4 per coffee because I really enjoy my lattes or my espressos. But the unfortunate truth is I'm not nearly as much of a coffee connoisseur as I'd like to believe. So I'm just spending a lot of money on expensive coffees because it happens to be an expensive coffee shop that's along my driving route. So, you know, then you realize, wow, this is actually not a good number because I'm spending extra money on something that I don't need to be spending extra money on because I'm buying a food item. I'm paying more for it than I want to because it's not something I overly care about the quality of.
And that's a good example of no matter how much you try to resist things, you're immersed in this society, so you do at some point fall into some of these categories.
Yeah, absolutely. But and you get to understand yourself a little bit better and maybe find out where you're doing things more mindlessly than you thought. So, you know, this is a really good way to not only get your eating control but get your spending under control. You know, if you don't know the difference between a $3.50 coffee and a $1.05 coffee, you know, maybe you should be drinking a $1.05 one. But similarly, you know, if for instance the amount of money I spend on alcohol compared to what you spend on alcohol is probably mind blowing, but we drink almost the same amount, just that, you know, I really have a thing for the high end scotches, et cetera. It's a choice that I've made, right? But so I know when I look at that bill, I'm like, oh, okay, this isn't mindless. This is actually a decision I've made. Yep. But it also makes you aware of, again, exactly where your money's going. It's a good indicator. We've talked about this with nutrition that in clinical research, you know, you have a very poor chance of even recalling what you ate in the last 24 hours, right? So I can take you, and you know as well as anyone, into in a buffet, and you can pick out what you want to eat. I will give it to you. And then the next day I'll get you back in and say, okay, so what did you eat yesterday? And you'll probably forget to include things, right? Credit cards don't forget. right? They, I mean, they know exactly where you spent your money, exactly how much it was. I mean, you could really even use credit card bills if you use your credit card enough to figure out basically the routes you drive in life. And I guarantee you, if it was all mapped out, it would actually be pretty, pretty surprising how much a creature of habit we all are.
Well, yeah, I mean, that kind of goes without saying. Yeah, and I mean, yeah. Again, that's all of that comes back to, as much as people don't like to be lumped into population statistics, we are all part of the population, and that's how those stats do describe us to some degree.
Absolutely. So the whole moral of this is that we know, from looking at stats, we know that a very large amount of money is being spent on food. And a very large proportion of that money is being spent on foods not being purchased in the grocery store. I'm sure we could dig down these stats and find out, you know, healthy foods versus non-healthy foods. And in the particular set I'm looking at, I can see breakdowns of vegetable production and fruit production, et cetera, but I can't really see it in terms of purchases, et cetera. But I can tell you that... yeah, it's a bit skewed because I can look at production in terms of like tons produced, but things like fruits and vegetables obviously way less than meats. But the data is there, so it is to be able to be dug through. But the key is, we know that in by and large, since we're putting on weight, since we have a quote unquote obesity epidemic, that these numbers are higher than they need to be. But we're voting with our money as a population that this is what we want. We want more food because we're already spending $1.6 trillion on it. And if you put the right food in front of us, we'll probably bump that up to 1.8. So that's just what we're doing as a population. So you yourself have to keep track of how you're voting with your food, right? So if you're part of the group who's just continually spending more and more on food, then don't be surprised if you're gaining more weight just like everybody else around you. So you're going to have to vote with your dollars and figure out, you know, vote on how you want to live your life. The cool thing about your dollars is that the record is unless you're an all cash type of person, that record is going to be very clear, very concise, right? Whereas with calorie intake and trying to figure out how much fat you're burning on a treadmill, it's all just wild guesses. You know, the amount of food you spent per day on it using your credit card is going to be, you know, pretty bang on, more or less. You know, there'll be the odd time where you bought lunch for your friend and then your friend bought lodge for you, but by and large you're always going to know exactly how much you spent. So it could be sort of a missing tool, not only for weight loss, but then in generally figuring out kind of who you are and what you do and what you place the most importance on. I think that keeping track of your money would really, really open you up to who you are. I think that.
I guess the simplest way to say it is, would you be embarrassed or not to show somebody else exactly where you spent all your money as far as food?
Yeah, exactly. Or you know, for this $1.7 trillion in food, it'd be very interesting if you had the exact numbers for people. If you were a snoop, went through their credit cards, knew every individual number, and you know you're walking around Epcot Center and you just pull them over and you're like, "Hey, John Smith, you know, did you know that you spent over $53,000 last year on food?" And then gauge their reaction, right? Especially if they tend to be, you know, underweight, overweight, etc., and trying to very quickly rationalize it, right? So, I think the numbers are probably shocking everyone, but it's something that you can use as a pretty interesting weight loss and life tool. I mean, putting it all together, the balance of it all is that the reason you go to work every day, you know, regardless of how much you love your job, is for the economies of it, right? And it's to get money in so that you can spend it. So paying attention to what you're spending it on will give you a really good idea of really what kind of life you're living, what type of person you are, and what your importances are. And if you're spending a large amount of money on food, and a large amount of that money is in fast food restaurants or convenience stores, despite what you're telling yourself, what your dollar is telling us is that your overall weight and health may not be as important to you as you actually like to say it is. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I mean, money doesn't lie.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so that's just taking from, I guess, last week's FiLife and sort of throwing some more numbers into it. And then it's two research scientists trying to talk economics. So for the economics majors who are listening to this bashing their heads against the wall, we apologize. Yeah, as much as we like to yell and scream about people with no nutrition background talking nutrition, we went and paid you back. So, yeah. We're just trying to put it all together for you.
All right. Well, I mean, I think we can just wrap it up on that one.
Absolutely. All right. And if you want this type of data, there's data that's readily available online. There's various companies that look this stuff up.
If you want to know more about it, just drop us an email and we'll help you find it.
Perfect.
All right. So, for Brad Peel, I'm John Barbin, and that's your PhiLife podcast.